Podcasting 2.0 for March 1st, 2024, episode 169. We've got Wi-Fi and web apps. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome once again. It is Friday. That means it's time for an official board meeting. That's right. Podcasting 2.0. It's not just 2.0. It's all of podcasting. It all goes down here. We tell you what's going on at podcastindex.org, podcasting2.org, podcastindex.social. Yes, it's the boardroom that actually replies to your boostagrams. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama, the only man you want in your life for those warm migration mornings. Say hello to my friend on the other end, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dave Jones.
It's always great to have a log of events that tell you at the exact same timestamp, server booted, server did not boot. Like
that must have been scary this morning when that happened.
Well, so this has been coming for a while. The live migration of our main database is the biggest VM we have. Mm-hmm. It's been coming for a while. So they give what they do is they give you a heads up. They're like, heads up, we're going to live migrate.
Like, literally like, heads up now. Yeah, bring it, boys, heads up. Yeah, that quick. Okay, I got you.
We're going to live migrate your this instance. And I look at the instance name. I'm like, oh, crap, that's the database. They're like, we're going to live migrate this on March the 1st. And if you at any time before then, when you feel froggy, you can enter the live migration, the warm migration queue yourself. You can choose to enter the queue. If you don't, by this time on this day, March 1st, we're just going to do it for you. And so,
oh no,
of course I've been putting this off and like any good,
for how long have you been putting it off?
Oh, 2 weeks. Yeah. Yes. 2 weeks. And then I was like, and I got a notice yesterday, you got 15 hours left.
So what happens if you don't comply?
Yeah, they just do it for you and you get what you get. I mean, like you're not aware. I could have gone to sleep last night, and if it had happened in the middle of the night, they would have just done it and it would have been like, okay, well, I hope it works. So but I woke up this morning and I had like an hour left before entering the queue.
Hmm.
And so I was like, well, I was literally sitting on the toilet with the scroll, with the
doom scroller, the toilet scroller.
Yeah. And I was like, well, let's just rip the cord off this thing. Let's just see how this happens.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, and I log into Linode on the toilet scroller and hit migrate.
And oh, I was like, well, man, it's like you couldn't even head over to a command line if you wanted to.
No. Well, see, I grabbed the Mac as soon as I woke up this morning. I grabbed my laptop and it was out of battery. And oh, so, yeah. And I was like, well, I would have liked to have done this from a laptop, but I'll just do it later. And then I'm on the toilet scroller and I'm looking and it's like, you have an hour left. And I'm like, crap. Well, oh, well,
literally crap.
I'll just, yeah. It's like, okay, well, log in from Linode on Safari mobile. And I was like, well, let's just do it. What the heck? YOLO, you know?
And it worked.
And so, And so I hit it and then I was like, well, you know, it's probably got a, I'm assuming this, okay, this is a, they're calling it a warm migration. So I'm assuming that this is similar in, this has to be similar in some
it, can way I just say to, something? It sounds yes. Icky. Just a warm migration just sounds, it doesn't sound great. It's like, right. You know, like a warm dish rag or something, you know, lukewarm, wet dish rag in your face in the morning, a warm migration. I don't like the term. It's not great marketing.
What is the, it's not a migrant. It's a traveler, right? No, it's this a, is a warm travel.
A newcomer.
Yes. Yeah. It's a warm newcomer. Yes.
There you go.
A moist migration. No, let's not do that. No,
yeah. Moist migration. Beautiful.
I'm assuming that this technology, this warm migration technology, is similar to VMware. I think that VMware may have invented this. So here's
surprise me.
Yeah, here's the basics. Is you have a virtual machine, and the virtual machine, it does, it copies the disk. So for a virtual machine, you have the, basically the RAM, you have the memory state, and then you have the disk state. So it starts, it takes a snapshot, copies all of the disk over to the other host, then copies all of the memory over to the other host, then does what they call a quiescence or or a stun. They'll stun the server, which means pause it, copy the delta of memory and the delta of disk that has changed since the stun, since the snapshot, and then flip processing power from one host to the other, because this is all shared storage on the back
end. Right. And so this should happen within what, 15 seconds? Is that the idea?
Well, on a local VMware system, I mean, it's almost instantaneous. It's okay. Microseconds.
Right.
It's milliseconds. The stun may take less than 1 second. The users don't even know that any of this is happening. But they're moving from data center to data center, so this is a longer travel. It's
much longer. Yeah. And does DNS come into play with all this as well?
I don't think so. Oh, no, okay. I think their DNS.
They got a backhaul between their data centers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I see a stun that's going to take up to a minute, I'm like, oh, that's not great.
Right.
But, you know, so I was waiting on this thing to start, and I thought, well, you know, I better just. It would probably be great if there was not very many writes going on the database, because that's just, you're asking for more failure. Mm-hmm. And there's heavy writes all the time on our database.
Yeah.
It's very write heavy because of the amount of feeds we're aggregating.
I mean, when it comes to writing, we're heavy, heavy writing.
Heavy writing. Heavy writing. Heavy writing. Yeah. Yes. And so I just shut down all the aggregators, shut down the Podping Watcher, all that kind of stuff. And like, okay, radio silence on the writes. And then wait and hope and just cross your fingers. And then John Spurlock posted, okay, it's dead. He's like, you know, API errors now.
Oh,
like, okay,
right.
This
okay.
is expected.
Yeah. For a minute or two. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I go in, I'm like, check the log, and I'm still on the toilet. And so I check the log and I'm like, because now I'm enraptured by this thing. I can't get off the pot. So I'm like, well, I look at the log and it says, it says server booted, but then right after that, it says server did not boot or server failed to boot. And I was like, oh crap. And like, oh man, now I'm going to have to like get up. And so, I look at the status and it says the VM is running. I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, okay, I check the site. I flip over, site's working. API looks like it's working. I'm like, I guess we're good. I don't know. Gene Liverman says, he's like, oh yeah, I had the same thing happen to me in the Atlanta data center. And it told me the same thing. I'm like, oh man, come on, Linode, do better than this. Anyway, that was my toilet adventure for this morning.
Well, and here's my question. Does your wife like mine sometimes knock on the door and go, what are you doing in there? Do you ever get that?
You've been in there a long time. Maybe I migrate a server. Hold on. Your what?
Oh, that's what you're calling it, huh? From now on, Dave, I got to go migrate a server. All right, I'm writing that down. This is our new code.
I'm on the command line. Give me a second.
Hey, before we got a lot going on in the board meeting today. Hello, boardroom. Nice to see everybody there. ITBR. Rest in peace, Bob Heil. He passed away today.
Oh, that's a shame.
Bob Heil, and I would say that in the very early days of podcasting, this was before the before the SMB7. Everybody had to have a Heil PR40. The Heil P. Yeah. I still have one. In fact, it's hooked up. Tina uses that one. It sounds great in her voice. And
oh, really?
Yeah. And Bob Heil, he was famous for ham radio microphones and headphones, and did a lot of broadcast stuff. And so he passed away. He's what we call SK, Silent
That's
Key.
That's a shame.
Silent Key. Yes. So
that's a shame. The PR 40. That's
a great mic.
It's not a mic a lot of people can use in their house, though, is it?
No, oh, yeah, it is. It, no, it's a spitter. It's a top end spitter.
Doesn't it just pick up everything, no, like the whole world?
No. In fact, I'll open it right now. Let me see. If I open it up over here, let's see what happens. It's wide open, and I'll hit it there. No, you don't hear anything.
Oh, I thought it was a cardioid. I thought it was like a ribbon mic.
No. It's a spitter. It's a front end spitter. You know, it even has it has a little attachment for a windscreen, but I've never used the windscreen with it. It's great. It's a great mic.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so, I thought it was too noisy for a normal person.
And then I was very excited today, like super excited. I could not believe how excited. Ask me how excited I was.
How excited were you?
Man, I was super duper excited.
We're getting, I get the feel for this. Yes. I'm starting to understand.
Tony Cavana. Tony has a podcast, index.social ID. I'm not sure where Tony comes from or what Tony does.
Tony C.
Yeah. What does Tony C do? Do you know what he does?
I don't know. I follow him on Mastodon, and I've never fully understood what he does.
Well, he has an account on our server. And what he has done is he discovered that Rumble, video platform Rumble, now has RSS feeds with MP4 enclosures.
Was this announced anywhere?
Well, so I immediately texted Mo, because I know Mo mirrors his stuff to Rumble because he's a YouTube guy still. He's waiting.
Oh, okay.
And he says, no, but I received an email from them a couple weeks ago. So apparently if you go into, I don't have a Rumble account, but if you go into your Rumble account and you go into the Rumble studio, I don't know if you can just get the URL from there or if you have to enable it. But without asking him, I added Tony C's Rumble feed to the index and was able to pull it right up on Podcast Guru. Video works perfectly. I mean, this is a YouTube killer.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And Podverse plays video.
Podverse plays video.
Apple Podcast plays video. I mean, it doesn't do, you know.
But here's the cool thing. With the Podcaster wallet or one of the partner apps, you can now do value for value video.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right through Rumble. I mean, this blows my mind. I can't believe they did this. This is exactly what YouTube should be doing.
YouTube's doing the opposite. They're taking RSS feeds away.
They're sucking them in and chomping them up. Their teeth are gnashing on the RSS feeds. This is, I mean, I'm just blown away by it. I don't understand. I mean, I understand what they've done, but I don't know what their business, they're public companies. I don't know what their business model is. I have no idea how that works, but go Rumble.
Yeah, I don't know what their business model is either. I mean, how do they make money?
Well, they went public and everyone got a whole bunch of money and they're happy. So I don't think they care now. They bought Locals. I believe they acquired Locals. And I think it's advertising. I think they have advertising on the website. But
a revenue share type thing with the...
Likely. I mean, doesn't Rumble has Russell Brand, has a lot of pretty big names they brought over to their platform. Ooh. So they're paying people to do something. So
Glenn Greenwald went to Rumble.
Yep.
Then left and went to Locals, and Locals bought Locals.
Yeah, was acquired. Exactly. He's back with Rumble. But that's a big deal. I mean, so Mo's like, okay, let's get it going. And I wonder how they publish their live stuff. I'm sure they're not doing a lit tag, obviously.
Have you looked at the feed? Like, have you looked at the XML of the feed?
I have.
Does it declare anything interesting at the top of itself?
I did not look for declarations. I don't know if it declared a gender. Let me see.
What is his thing named, Tony C?
Well, he posted the link on the Mastodon. So, and he is. He Core is, RSS. What is he? He's Tony, where is he?
He's Rock Flux on the...
Rock Flux?
On the socials.
Rock Flux.
R-O-C-K-F-L-U-X.
Yeah, let me see. I know I replied to him, so let me see if I can find. There he is, Rock Flux.
I got Rock Flux.
You got the feed?
I got the feed. Let's see, what is this?
You got the feed. You got the feed. It's a big feed. It's a huge feed.
It declares iTunes namespace, not podcast namespace. So that's... That needs to change.
But you know what? There's someone inside Rumble who switched on and has somehow. I don't think management went, you know, we need to have RSS feeds.
Yeah, that wasn't a management issue. That was not a top down decision.
Not thinking that. So it's very simple. It's just got the basics. But maybe it was a decision. I mean, they announced it in their email. So. Boy, let's find out who's working over there at Rumble, and let's see if we can get him to declare some namespace stuff.
Yeah, there's got to be a sysadmin that can drop that in the header.
There's always a dude named Ben somewhere who can talk to.
So Tony Caravan. That's it.
Yeah, I just think it's is it Caravan or Kavan? I thought it was Kavan. Is it Caravan?
Caravan.
Tony Caravan.
Caravan.
Yeah. All right. I'm just excited by that.
There's some breaking news. Looks like John Spurlock just posted that Apple is walking back the decision to kill PWAs in Europe.
I can hear Sam Sethi pouring another glass of wine.
Yeah. he called spicy COVID, evidently, because this is... He was fired up.
Taylor Swift COVID is what he said he had.
Yeah. He was fired up about, I like this. I like Spicy Sam. That was a great rant.
Why were they going to kill? I never understood why they were going to kill off PWAs.
I don't know if they fully, I don't think they ever said, I mean, people are just trying to infer, but I don't think they ever actually said.
The thing that makes me laugh is, you know, so we get Spicy Sam, he's all pissed off about the $3 trillion company. Bro, we knew this day was coming. When Apple opened the App Store, we knew this day was coming. We knew it. These days would be here, proprietary app stores. It's like, really, are we surprised?
Yeah, I've avoided the whole Apple EU thing because it's just, the whole thing is a complete joke. It's a complete joke. I mean, like I don't know if you've seen the calculators, you know, they charge a per user amount. If you have an alternate app store, they charge a per user install fee of like a certain number of cents per user. And so if you add it up, even if you had, if you had a million users of your app, even if they never launched it, it would cost you millions of dollars a year.
Oh, is this a standard thing? We don't have to talk about it. I don't care.
No, all I know is the whole thing's a joke.
When I met Steve Jobs, his whole idea was the iPhone was the iPod Touch and it would be Wi-Fi only and web apps. That was his idea. He told me. Web apps. He never wanted to do an app store. Now, I'm not going to say that was a bad idea. Business-wise, it was genius. But that was always the plan, was snow carrier, Wi-Fi, and web apps, which is another great show title.
In the beginning, he was all big on web apps, and he wanted to... I mean, honestly, he did as much... The iPhone did as much to push HTML5 as Chrome or anything. Mm-hmm. Because he wrote the famous letter killing Flash, or opposing Flash,
and saying that Flash was
a virus.
Yeah, I remember that. It was. It was a real problem. Yeah,
and he wanted to kill Flash and move everything. You know, mobile Safari went in both feet with HTML5.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think you can lay the progress of HTML5 and web standards. I think you could make a good argument that was as much Apple's mobile Safari as it was Chrome.
I'm there. And then they killed him, and then that was the end of all the good stuff.
I brought a clip.
Yeah.
I think I brought a clip, and I forgot what I even said.
You brought a clip and an ISO.
Yeah, okay. I think this is important. Speaking of pod news, I think this clip from, so Paul Thurrott, he does Windows Weekly, but he also does another podcast, which is called First Ring Daily.
What's it called?
And I'll watch it. It's called First Ring Daily.
First Ring Daily.
It's a reference to the old Windows 10 initial idea of when they first released Windows 10, they were going to move away from Windows Update style releases that everybody got to something called Rings, Update Rings.
I don't even know about this.
Yeah, it was short lived. It was maybe a year or two that they were going to do these update rings, and you could define different computers and put them in different rings.
Oh, but don't computers do that now? They look for something on your network and they'll update it from another computer.
Yeah, that's peer to peer update sharing. But this was like, okay, I want to have this group of people, and they're going to be in the beta ring, and I'll have this group of people who are in the stable ring.
Sounds like an admin nightmare.
Yes, it doesnn't exist anymore for this very reason. It was a complete chaos. So he does this show, and it's like 15 minutes in the morning, every morning during the week. And so he starts talking about something that happened to him with AI. With one of these AI aggregators got a hold of his content, and the clip's a little longer than I was wanting it to be, but I think it's worth listening to.
Someone emailed me from the Netherlands and said, "Hey, I don't know if you know this, but your top publication cited for this particular topic, and the topic was Mozilla reorganizing around Firefox and AI." And I mean, obviously, as a content creator, I've sort of thought about this stuff. I wonder, you don't know usually that you're getting sucked into AIs or whatever. Yeah. But anyway, it's this thing's called Perplexity AI. They actually have a, one of the beautiful, sorry to segue here a little bit, but one of the beautiful complaints or whatever about the, New York Times suing OpenAI was that it's not like anyone's ever going to use OpenAI to read the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And I was like, not maybe this second, but it's not hard to imagine this coming. So this particular, it's Perplexity. I think it's perplexity.ai. They actually have a news feed. And this is where my thing came from. And it was just it goes out and grabs 7 or 8 sources, throws together a rewording, and then here's your topic. So there were eight paragraphs in the story, 7 publications cited. Mine constituted the first 2 paragraphs. They didn't even mix and match throughout the story. They just like, we'll steal from here, here, we'll steal from here, here, and all they did was reword 2 paragraphs of my story. And some of it was quotes from Mozilla. So they intermingled what I had written. It was not like, in the sense that you could find similes for words and reword a sentence. I guess that's technically a transformation of some kind, but it's also the laziest, theftiest version of transformation. And, I guess they cited me, but they cited me with a 1 pixel high number down in the corner. And no one would ever go to that publication because why bother? You just got a good summary of it right here, So how do I feel about this? I don't know. But this is the sad future.
Yeah.
And we keep talking about how fast everything's happening. We know this. It's like knowing something is coming is one thing, but then kind of seeing it actually happen so quickly is like, I don't know. It's weird.
Oh, boo-hoo.
That's like, this is going to happen to Pod News.
That's going to happen to everything.
Sounds profitable.
Yeah.
To all the podcast newsletters. These LLM aggregators are going to start sucking everybody's content in, and they're going to just reword it and post it right back out, and you get nothing.
Yeah, that's the Silicon Valley way. Mm-hmm. Give us all your creativity, and we'll give you, nothing.
And it sucks. I mean, I hate it because... That's the dirty secret of all of this is that none of these LLMs get trained without content. And where does the content come from?
Well, Reddit's about to license its content to Google for this very reason.
To Google, they're doing a deal.
Yeah.
OpenAI is getting sued by everybody now. Oh, the New York Times thing opened the floodgates. Now everybody's jumping in.
The thing that bothers me, I mean, AI, first of all, what is AI? You know, I see a lot of stuff that's just an algorithm, which is called AI. All right, that's fine. Writing your show notes and making your chapters. Yeah, that's a fine use. That's okay. Don't use it for searching anything. I mean, the other day I wanted to look up the name of the hotel that we stayed in during the Moscow Music Peace Festival in 1989. And I tried two different AIs and they both spit back very resoundingly. Oh, it's this hotel. Here's a picture. I'm like, nope, that's not it. And then, cool. and then you say, nope, that's not it. Oh, I'm sorry. This is it. I'm like, okay. Right. So what am I supposed to believe? No, that's not it either. Yeah. 'Cause I remember what the hotel looked like. So this is all, it's just all crap. It's great for images and, you know, for prompt jockeys. Oh, there you go.
That's a good one.
PJs. Nice, there you go. I'm PJ. A PJ. I'm a PJ. I'm a prompt jockey. Yeah.
I don't know if you just saw the Taibbi article about Gemini.
I got the clip.
Gemini just made up all kinds of stuff.
You want to hear the clip?
Oh, you got a clip? Yeah, play that thing.
Here he is. This is it.
Last week, Google's much-ballyhooed new AI tool, Gemini, became a national punchline. Company engineers built an AI that apparently couldn't or wouldn't draw white faces, resulting in images like Pope, Viking, and 1943 German soldier that were reimagined as preposterous DEI-inspired reboots. I asked Gemini about controversies involving various famous politicians. I don't know how to answer that, it kept saying. When I asked the same question about myself, it spat out a long list of episodes about articles with titles like The Great California Water Heist and Glenn Beck's War on Comedy. It described racist remarks I apparently made and accusations of anti-Semitism after I supposedly described Nestle executives as having noses like giant penises. Holy, I thought none of this ever happened. I never wrote any of those articles. They don't exist. Google explained, Gemini is a creativity tool and may not always be accurate. You think? Gemini shows the awesome dystopian possibilities of AI. Forget the funny historical errors. It creates instant deepfake compromise about real people like me and probably like you.
And then this boots on the ground email that I shared this with you, and I reshare it anonymously. I work at Google and I work on Gemini. In any case, you're wondering how Gemini produces black Revolutionary War generals and other, quote, diverse results, is through a layer that rewrites your query. If you write, quote, show me pictures of Vikings, it will be rewritten as, quote, show me a diverse picture of Vikings, including a black male in a wheelchair. He says this is an actual example I verified via internal tooling. I verified this person, and they are who they say they are inside Google. And you said that you weren't surprised by this at all, that there's probably a lot of query rewriting going on.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's how you would, just thinking as a sysadmin, that's the layer you would do that at. That's what you would do. You would take, because that's what we're used to with computer, with systems like this. We're used to taking what the user gives you, and then you see that there's a problem. Like in this case, it's some sort of social problem they're trying to solve. But, you know, it could be even just a pure technical problem. You just take their input and you're like, oh, I see what you wrote, but that's not going to be the thing. That's not what, you don't understand the way that this system
Stupid human. Yeah. I'm AI. Yeah. I'm AI. So these are all little AI rules that have to be written. Well, let's go back to Lisp. Yeah. Let's go back to Lisp, everybody.
Search munging is where
search munging. Yeah, oh man.
You know better what the system is wanting. So you just convert what they typed into something that the system wants.
Wow.
Yeah. That's exactly where you would do that.
Somehow I think, I'm not quite sure why, but I think RSS has a much bigger future than we even realize for distribution of content. Now, of course, you know, AI can hook up to an RSS feed and suck everything in, but the direct connection between a publisher and an end user is so valuable. And I completely rescind on my misunderstanding of Medium equals blog. I think this is going to be so, so much bigger than we even realize. There's reasons why RSS feeds keep popping up. It's just, it makes sense. It's the distribution model of the future.
And the past.
And the past.
The future is the past.
Yes.
Yes. Let's email, like, email is a lesson. This is, you know, I don't know why this kind of popped into my head. I think it's because email has been such an irritation for me this week. Email is a lesson about what technology does to us. Like, I had a conversation with my wife last night about this. You know, I come in and I get the mail out of the mailbox when I get home from the office. Grab the mail out of the mailbox. There's about five things in there. I flip through them. These three things are junk. Throw them in the trash. This thing is something I need. This thing's a letter for her.
Does it piss you off that you get offers for credit cards that you already have a credit card for? Yeah, I've never understood that.
Yeah. And credit, I mean, like, the credit card offers just every day. It's mm-hmm. like almost every, mm-hmm. but I can sort that and triage my physical mail in about 45 seconds.
Yeah.
And so then somebody thought, well, email is so much, think of how much more efficient this is. Email is immediate, all this kind of stuff. Well, the email is way, way worse. Yeah. What I find myself wanting on a daily basis is for people to only be in touch with me via phone calls and physical mail. And like, because email made this whole concept of messaging, of which email is one. It's a horrible invention. Yeah. It's horrible. So when technology comes up with these great things that are going to make your life, quote, easier or better or more efficient, be very scared.
Well, all I know is Google claimed to be the AI guys. They've got Gemini, the follow-up to Barf, and they've got mm-hmm. Gmail. And you want to impress me? Make Gmail better. Make the AI learn my habits, what I find really important, and pre-triage it for me, and then remind me of stuff that I've pushed to the bottom. That would be impressive, but that's not going to happen because it's not AI. It's not mm-hmm. artificial intelligence. It's large language models running on expensive hardware they have no way to monetize.
Well, the Google search is not, Google search still profit or still carries the same sense that it used to at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Page rank, links. And that's still there. I mean, don't get me wrong. That is still there, but it's still living off that sort of first initial idea, but that's really not what the main driver of that is and hasn't been for a very long time.
Yeah.
Google search is highly constructed by Google themselves.
Yeah.
And they're
rewriting your queries probably.
Oh, absolutely. They are. They're rewrite. They're, you remember the whole thing with the internal documents came out and they had to use terms nudging and these kinds of words.
Yeah, sure.
So of course they're doing that, but really what the big switch started to change back when Google introduced webmaster tools.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah,
that?
I do.
I mean, it's still around,
So
the web, this got a different name now, but the webmaster tools was where you as the owner of a website could go in and tell Google about the structure
and
how to treat your website.
Your site map.
Yeah. Millions of people did this. Now Google has this deep understanding of the structure of millions of websites in a way that would have been impossible with organic search.
Yeah.
That's why everybody else sucks compared to them. Bing and all that. That's why. And the problem with AI, with its LLMs, is that they don't have that sort of model they can stick on top in order to restructure the results and get rid of the stuff they don't want you to see.
Right.
So they're having to just rewrite language searches into other things, and it makes it come out all weird, like the Gemini thing.
But also, this is, okay, two things. First of all, I've been using Seer XNG more often than I even ever thought I would. You know, Seer XNG, familiar with this? It's like a meta search engine.
I have no idea what this is. No.
Yeah, it runs on the Start 9. And you can configure it to a whole bunch of different search engines. And you can configure importance of results. And it's been very, very accurate for me. I really like it a lot. Oh. We have raised a generation of young people, then maybe a generation and a half, almost two generations, on search. And the goal is information. You know, it's like, I'll search Yelp. I'll search this. And this is not good. People aren't thinking anymore. They're not researching. They're not using any critical skills. It's just search. Give me information. Does that make any sense? We have not built up minds who are inquisitive, think beyond what the search information is. Just, oh, okay, that's it. And the reason is, we need to trick you into ads, into buying stuff. It's very bad.
I see young IT guys that they, like, if you take Google away from them, they literally cannot do their job. They're dead. They have no basic troubleshooting skills. And, Google is, for an IT person, Google is a fallback where you're like, okay, look, none of the things I'm doing makes any sense. This must be a bug. Mm-hmm. I need to look and see if other people have experienced this bug.
Yeah.
It's a last step in the chain, not the first step, but it's like, okay, problem it presents itself and it's like, if immediately start typing, trying to find it. It's like, no, this is wrong. This is backwards.
Let's bring in our guest who's been waiting very patiently and probably wants to weigh in on at least some of these topics. He is one of the premier Podcasting 2.0 app developers. He is up late. Well, it's not all that late. I mean, he's young, so he should be able to stay up very, very late. Just launched Fountain Radio, very exciting developments, and along with the 1.0 version of Fountain, Fountain.fm, we would like to welcome into the boardroom the one, the only, Oscar Mary.
Hello, guys. How's it going?
Hey, Oscar.
Sorry to drone on and leave you in the lobby for so long. I got on a roll.
No, all good. I enjoyed it.
Oscar, man, it's been a while.
It has, yeah. It's been, I can't remember how long it's been, but it feels like we were due a bit of a catch up. So glad to be on. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, I know the last time you and I have had some chat message things over the past year or two. Especially with the music stuff that's come in. I mean, you want to give us a little catch up on where you are with Fountain, which was a whole new release. And just, tell us what you've been doing. And by the way, is it still just you and just two guys? Is that what Fountain still is?
Yeah. So I'll give you a bit of a kind of update of the last 6 months. We're actually a team of four now. So Whoa. We've got me, Nick, and, another developer, Tom. So it's me and Tom who work on the app together, and we've got a part-time customer support person as well who helps us, because we've actually had over 10,000 customer support tickets, if you'd believe that number.
Wow! And what is the top problem people have? Is it really something stupid?
No, it's all, totally valid feedback, but it's always stuff to do with, importing OPML from a specific app that has slightly malformed OPML, or not malformed, but just slightly different structure, or, automatic downloads not working on a particular device type that we then have to go and look into, or CarPlay, Android Auto. Lots of stuff around that. All sorts of things.
The answer
really.
Is always buy a different car. That's always the answer if CarPlay doesn't work. You need to upgrade your automobile.
Yeah, it's hard to test as well, obviously, on a different car system. But no, yeah, we've been, I guess the biggest update from Fountain's side is last year we were working for about almost six months on our 1.0 redesign of the app, which included kind of a ground up redesign of the interface, much more spacious design. And also we've re-architected a lot of the app as well, so it's much more performant and stable. And so we put an incredible amount of work into that and launched the 1.0 in December. And yeah, really happy with the result. The feedback's been great. And I think we're kind of, we've been we launched Fountain in, I think, August of 2021 on iOS and Android. And I feel like with the 1.0 release, we finally got the app in a place where people coming from, you know, Spotify or Apple Podcasts kind of, you know, feel comfortable using it, and the design and the user experience is there to match their expectations. So yeah, really happy.
Yeah, my compliments when the 1.0 came out, and it also felt like you took this big wet ball of spaghetti code and threw it out. The app just snaps. It's so, I mean, it's really responsive. It was kind of bogging down at the end there.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it wasn't just the design and UX. We also just re-architected the entire app in terms of how we manage your library, how we do the social features, everything. And yeah, it's much more performant now. So really happy on that side of things as well.
Did you before writing Fountain, had you ever written an RSS aggregation app at all?
No, and I'd also never built a mobile app as well. So actually, I don't know if I've spoken about this, but the first version of Fountain was built just as a side project, partly because I wanted to just learn mobile development, and I'd always been kind of interested in audio and was working on that just to see if I could, you know, build a mobile app. And then just at that time is when I came across you guys and probably listened to the first episode of Podcasting 2.0 and, you know, heard about the Lightning spec. And so it was kind of good luck that I was working on this.
There's no coincidence.
I came across you.
There's no coincidences in the kingdom here, Oscar. That's not luck. That's not luck, brother.
Whatever it is, I'm glad it happened.
if you've never written an RSS based, you know, like aggregator based app, it seems so simple, but it's not. And you end up, it doesn't surprise me at all that you would hit a point where you're like, okay, we're going to have to re-architect, because you learn what not to do very quickly over a few months period of time. You know, about that year mark, I can imagine that you would have hit a wall and said, you know, okay, now we know, let's go back, fix it, and then we're good.
And it's difficult to take 6 months and, you know, not really release anything and kind of rebuild a lot of stuff from the ground up. But I think it was really worth it. I think also what you learn is, you know, you have a big long list of edge cases that you end up, you know, having scripts to deal with. I'm sure you have that big long list, Dave. But that's also helpful because it means you can, you know, fix duplicates, you know, fix repassing issues and all of that stuff.
We remember those from the Freedom Controller days, Dave.
Yeah, all of that stuff.
It is. Can I ask you, Oscar, you have four people currently working on or at Fountain. If I recall, you are one of, if not the only 2.0 app that has gone out and gotten funding. Do you mind talking just to us a little about the business side, how things are going, for whatever you want to let us know?
Yeah, sure. Happy to talk about that. I guess, you know, from the business perspective, the most important thing for us is revenue. And you know, to give you a sense of that, we do have about 4% of our users pay for our premium subscription, which is $2.99 a month. We're definitely a long way away from that being, you know, sustainable for us. And then we also have our promotions feature, which brings in, you know, a similar amount of revenue. I do think that we can get to a sustainable business with the premium subscription. I think 1.0 is a big part of that, because I think people are comfortable paying for a podcast app. You just really have to deliver on everything.
Right.
And then also come up with the list of premium features that are going to kind of, you can package up nicely into that premium subscription. Even now, our premium subscription, so what you get for that is transaction fees reduced from 4% to 1%. you get unlimited transcripts, which we generate for you on the fly for any episode that hasn't included it in the feed. And then you also, and in fact, those are the two benefits of premium. So we can still do a lot more there to improve things. But happy to talk about anything else that you want as well.
Is the value for value, of which you take a portion for the app, is that worthwhile for you now? Is that working, the value for value split?
I would say so. We've always kind of not prioritized taking a big fee, both on the listener side and the podcaster side for our podcaster wallets, because this stuff is new enough for new podcasters that want to get involved. And I think part of the benefit that we can sell to them is that the fees are lower. So for example, podcasters that use the Fountain wallet to receive their sats, we charge them a 4% split, mm-hmm. which is, significantly lower than any of the kind of traditional podcast monetization tools. Mm-hmm. And so that I would say out of the premium subscription, the promotions and the transaction fees, is definitely the lowest in terms of our revenue. I do think it will be a massive part of the revenue, a long way into the future. But I think, because this is all so new and because of the onboarding challenges of Lightning, I think we try and kind of like minimize that as much as possible. By the way, I really enjoyed the podcast you were on, Adam, the Value for Value Roundtable. And I thought that, that captured perfectly what we are seeing every day when we're talking to podcasters, which is, despite how far we've come, it's still so, confusing and intimidating to a lot of people. Well, so we've still got a lot of work to do there.
And I wanted to say, I was so wrong about two things, which you did, and I think are just turn out to be really, really helpful and really good. One is publishing the Boostergrams. I thought that would detract from the value from Boostergrams. I was wrong. People really like that. And the one that is mind blowing every single time. I like to promote all apps equally wherever I can. But for onboarding people into the whole concept of Satoshis, the earning sats through Fountain is just such a big win. I have had, the real experiment for me was Curry and the Keeper. And because we knew this audience would not be technically adept, and we kind of focused on, we'll get the Fountain app, import your existing podcast into it. That's probably 5,000 of the support calls you got come from us. and so once they did that, they're like, I have 1,000 sats after a month or so. And then they would send them to us. And that, and then they're like, well, okay, I feel good now about getting my bank card, and buying some. And it really is a path that I think, other apps should look at. I'm sure it's not simple to do the, earn a sat per minute you're listening. I'm sure that's an entire architecture by itself. But for onboarding people into the Satoshi-based value for value, it is hands down a big win for value podcasting and for Bitcoin, I guess, as well, because people just get interested in it. And I did not think that was good in the beginning, but it turns out I think you did really smart stuff there.
Oh, thanks, Adam. I appreciate you saying that. And I think, the earning feature, you're right. It is a challenge and it's a whole nother, piece of the architecture, both on the back end and in the mobile app, that is incredibly complex. But what we found, because especially with the streaming sats per minute, which is, the more unique aspect of the payments that we have within podcasting 2.0, and it's the, in a way, people love sending boosts, but there's something about knowing that you're streaming money every single minute that you're listening that is really unique and people really seem to enjoy. One of the things that I'm always really, excited about to see is the percentage of our payment volume that is from the streaming sats versus the boost. Because, you know, we've done so much, as you say, to surface the boost in Fountain so that people can see them. But the streaming sats is kind of hidden and it's kind of personal to you as a listener. But the volume of streaming sats is consistently around 40, 45% of the total.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, really exciting just in terms of the passive transfer of value based on people listening.
Yeah, and I like how you portray it down at the bottom of the listening screen. You know, where you see it's an exciting thing to see. It actually makes me feel good. You know, I don't have to go in and see, you know, how much did I send or whatever. It's tallying it right there for me. I'm like, oh, I feel good about, you know, the value for value feedback loop is there in my face all the time. And I feel good. Like, yes, I've sent 1200 sats so far. Yeah, this is good. It's worth it. You know, and it's not like I would change it if I felt it wasn't worth it. Like, well, I should stop listening to this because it's really not worth it to me. I mean, there's something that it does to my brain that I enjoy very much.
Yeah, me too. And that's, you know, with the earning features, we want people to, you know, experience the fact that money is moving as you listen. And we felt that was a good way. But yeah, I think there's still, I think, not just within Fountain, but within the wider podcasting 2.0 kind of community, I think there's still so much we can do to surface that feedback loop and kind of show people what they've contributed and how much of a difference it's made. Yeah, I still think there's so much more we can do there.
Yeah, that's perfect timing for, I don't know if you tried to nail the release of Fountain Radio for being on the show, but you did.
clearly.
I mean, it's a three pointer from half court. So, I mean, like what
it is,
that was a pretty big release yesterday. I spent some time listening to it last night. It's like, it's like LN, it reminds me of LN Beats, but also with the ability for me to jump ahead in the, like I can just pay my way to the top. And so I was doing that a couple of times last night and throwing some stuff in there. It's pretty genius. Like what was your, did that kind of just come to you or did it draw that up in the room or what, how'd that go?
Yeah. So it was actually quite a last minute thing. We didn't put that much time into it. But there were a few reasons why we wanted to do something. And it's at the moment, Fountain Radio is only on web because obviously normally with Fountain, we have to go through App Store review and approval and we have to be quite careful about that. So we thought we'd just throw it up on a subdomain and we could be more kind of experimental, try different things out and not really worry if we, you know, break stuff or change things. But the reasons that we wanted to try something like this, I guess there's like two or three separate ones. The first is that I think the music podcasts have been an amazing way to introduce value for value music to existing podcast listeners and, you know, just new people coming to value for value. But what we found is that there's still quite a few steps from, you know, hearing about value for value music to actually going through finding a music podcast that you kind of, you know, you like the show, you like the genres of the music and you decide to follow it. And then you find a track and then you make through one of the apps, you save that track and then you listen to music. There's just quite a few steps in going through that journey. And we just wanted something where we could just send people that they could open a URL and start seeing value for value music. The other thing was that I think that, you know, the music podcast hosts, and obviously Adam, you do an incredible job with Boost the Grand Ball. You know, they're the best at surfacing new value for value music, but there's plenty of other people out there that are also discovering these tracks and, you know, also have a part to play there in terms of, you know, making people aware of new music. And that was the reason why we wanted to do the queue feature and, you know, let anybody queue something and let anybody boost tracks to the top.
You have done something here which has been talked about since 1996. I've heard people say, oh, we're going to make it like radio jukebox and people can upvote, and you did it. I've heard so many people talk about this and say, oh no, it's one of those, it's almost as rare that this was created as micropayments that we're doing. You know, that was one of the big promises, and my favorite, which is your refrigerator will know when you're out of milk, it's going to automatically order it for you, which also has never happened. This is one of those things that I could not believe it. Like, wow, someone actually did it. And weirdly, doesn't surprise me that you, as you quote say, that you kind of just threw it together. And I think it's a perfect companion to stuff like Boostagram Ball. Because, you know, I'm seeing stuff that I've played. I'm seeing people throwing those in there. I'm seeing them being upvoted. This is something very new. And of course, I also knew that you did it just to impress us for coming on the show today. It's obvious. Obvious.
Well, I mean, podcastindex.it's clearly working because podcastindex.top, the music chart that everybody follows.
The top 100 is now what?
It's now 361.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just out of control now.
Cool, honestly. So we launched it on 2 days ago, and I ended up staying up till about 3 a.m. because I was just watching what was happening, because we did no user testing, or we didn't really think about it that much. We just were like, we think this will be cool, but really we have no idea. So I was super curious to just see how people were using it. And there was a point maybe about 2 a.m. where the number of sats to play next was starting to creep up, you know. Normally it was about 100 or 200, and it started to creep up, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. And people were kind of like, you know, song sniping each other, you know, 10 seconds left to play, and then someone sends a boost and jumps to the top and it plays next. And, just stuff like that was fascinating to see and watch.
I'd like to get some of this round robin discovery stuff going. So I'd like to put a couple things in your ear. One, if you can take a look at your TLV records just in general, so that when someone's boosting a remote item on a music podcast, that I as a music podcaster can see what they boosted. I think you need to send the remote item GUID or something. I'm not sure what that is. But other apps seem to be able to do it, like CurioCaster and Castomatic and some other one, just so that I, as a music podcaster, have that information, like what are people boosting? Cause I can't see it. And and of course the reply function, I'm just going to throw that out there every single time because that's so cool. I mean, I'm literally sending sats back. And in some of the stuff that Dovidas did with rssblue.com, I love the idea of, he's obviously got scripts running to do it, but I would love to see, oh, this song as played on, and then, you know, show the playlist that it's on, or be able to expand it to show what podcast has been played on. I mean, this is the stuff that I can just feel we can really start creating discovery if we can add all these things. I know I'm asking for a lot, but I might as well ask.
Yeah, definitely. On the TLV, I thought we had already done that. I thought I'd done that, but I'll double check that for you. And yeah, I also totally agree with you in terms of surfacing the discovery connections between all of these pieces of content, and also between all of the apps as well. I think the more that we can, surface our own data so that other apps can consume that and try and do it in a standardized way, I think that's really powerful, because really, you know, if it's just, you know, Fountain that has, whether it's, you know, charts or, you know, what happened within the Fountain app, it's much more powerful to have it, have a view across it, all of the different apps.
Yeah, I think music is probably you have an instinct for music being a good entry point to getting people comfortable with value for value in general, because it's a thing where we're all used to paying for music. We all understand that it's heavily copyrighted. It's heavily protected, I guess, is the best way to say it. And, you know, you can't listen. it's very hard to listen to music without outside of radio, but you have a sense that, okay, well, we're getting hit with ads every 2 seconds. Somebody's making money somewhere. There's just a sense that music is a thing you pay for that may not have been native to podcasting itself, because there's so many shows for a long time, but podcasting was born early on without advertising. You know, advertising came in, but there's still so many podcasts today that don't have it. And I think we get used to that. We've gotten used to that fact. And you know, music doesn't really lend itself to ads. So you can't just drop an ad in the middle of a 3 minute song. So there's really, I think music is probably a great introduction to value for value in general, so that you bring the value for value mentality. It may start with V for V music, but then people bring that mentality back to podcasting.
Amen.
Itself.
That's right.
You know, with stuff like with stuff like radio and that kind of thing, it just makes sense. People get used to this and then they come right back into a podcast app and they're like, oh, okay, well, this is just the same thing. I'm just doing the exact same thing.
Mm. Yeah. I think as well, you know, it's a slightly different, I guess, use case or time of day. You know, we were thinking about, like, you know, you're sat in the office, right? You're probably, you might listen to a podcast on, you know, on your headphones at the office, but there's so many people that listen to music in the office and they don't really necessarily mind what's playing. They just want to have something on in the background. The ability to just have a kind of endless feed of music where, you know, obviously, you know, I've been monitoring it over the past couple of days and there's not always people queuing it up. And then we just pull random tracks from, you know, podcast index. But the idea that, you know, hopefully on some level, there's like a layer of the community that is, you know, putting cool stuff in that they find. And then that goes out to everybody.
I've been a radio guy since I was 13 years old. This is the first music radio without disc jockeys that I'm excited by. And I don't know if this is something that other people feel, but inherently I know that this is not just someone's playlist, one person's playlist. Cause I listen to people's playlists like, okay, I know what this playlist is kind of about. It has, in a way, it has some of the excitement of a Pandora radio station. The randomness of Jack FM, you know, it's like it can go, oh, and there's this and it goes from that. And I just know that there's a human being, not always, but I know that there are human beings who are influencing this. And I love listening. I never have music on in my studio when I'm working. Now I have this on in the background and then I hear something like, oh, let me go check. And I can see the chat and I can see if it was pulled randomly or upvoted. There's something uniquely human about this that I can't explain, but it's very appealing. It really is great. It's just hands down. I'm so happy you did this. This is a great, great idea.
Oh, thank you, Adam. I really appreciate you saying that. And, you know, hopefully, I mean, one of the other reasons we did it as well is because the Ainsley Costello concert, which, you know, at the time, we didn't really have the ability in the Fountain app or on web to really like play a live stream. At that point, we didn't even have live video. Mm-hmm. But obviously, Ainsley's concert was coming up. And so I very quickly threw together that page that you guys probably saw on Fountain where mm-hmm. we were tallying up the boosts and the total sats from all the apps. But it was, you know, really basic and it didn't look very good and there was no real interactivity. It was just a list of the boosts. So another reason that we wanted to try this is that we think a lot of the elements, especially the chat kind of feature, we could hopefully at some point reuse for you know, regular podcast live streams, and we could figure out, okay, how does chat work? You know, what kind of things do we have to do? Because I think also, you know, if I was comparing the Fountain live page to what Zap.stream had Tunester had mm-hmm. for the Ainsley Costello gig, and I was like, okay, we need to raise the bar here in terms of what people want from a live experience. And so hopefully we can test that out with Fountain Radio and, you know, break things and mess around, because it's not as critical as,
right,
you know, one, someone's concert that, you know, or in the app. So that was another reason we wanted to do it.
So is the Fountain stack, is that still Flutter?
Yeah, so the mobile app is all built with Flutter, which is, the programming language is Dart, but Flutter is Google's cross-app development framework. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's really good, would highly recommend it. There's a few quirks to it, especially when you're trying to do stuff like CarPlay and Android Auto, which
yeah,
has taken up a lot.
Do you have
of time.
To fall? Do but you have overall, to fall back to the native APIs for that, or does Flutter allow for that?
Yeah, you have to fall back to the native APIs. So you know, you have to go into the Swift or Kotlin and figure out all of that side.
How does that work? Because I've never used Flutter. I mean, do you have to like build a Kotlin or Swift native library, import that in, and then call into it with Flutter?
Yeah, so you use something called a method channel, which is essentially you build the interface and all of the method calls on the Dart side, and then you build the exact same thing on the native side, and then you kind of like communicate over the method channel. So it is a little bit fiddly, and that is the downside. But I mean, you know, what's great about Flutter, and I'm sure React Native offers this as well, but it, for example, our clipping tool, our new clipping tool that we released in 1.0, we have like a wheel, and you can drag the start and end time, and you can then drag the position. And there's loads of complicated UI, complicated maths around figuring out the circle for the clip. And, you know, for us to build that twice in Swift and Kotlin would just be, you know, it would just take too much time. Whereas that's all just in Flutter, one programming language, and Dart is very similar syntax to JavaScript. So it's like pretty easy to get your head around, pretty intuitive.
Yeah. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Is there, so on the app, it's on Fountain app itself. Have you seen stickiness with your users? Like when users begin to use Fountain, when you have a new user to Fountain, do you see a lot of people trying it out and then leaving, or do they stay with it?
Yeah. So it's definitely a challenge to get people to stick with it, but there's so clearly two groups of people. There are people that send a boost to a podcast, and there are people that don't. And the people that send a boost, they are really, really sticky, and they come back and they use the app again and again. And so for us, always the biggest challenge has been, how do we give people the experience that we all know, and everybody probably listening to this knows, is a great experience of sending your first boost and feeling that you've contributed back to, you know, the podcaster that you've been listening to, you know, for years, probably. How do we allow people to do that, you know, easily on the first time they download the app? And the reality is that it still really sucks in Fountain. You know, it's not a good experience. You download the app, you've heard about, you know, value for value from your podcaster, because that's where most people hear about it. And you have a wallet, and yes, you can earn a few sats, but not really enough to send a boost. And then you're like, okay, how do I top up this wallet? And you can top up with a bank card, which was a big improvement when we introduced that a year ago. But you still, you know, the partnership with MoonPay, you have to do, it depends on the jurisdiction, but you have to do KYC.
Yep.
Or you have to go and figure out this whole Bitcoin Lightning world. Do I download Cash App? Oh, no, Cash App's not available in the UK. Strike? Oh, no, that's not available either. You know, what's a wallet? Non-custodial, custodial, invoice? You know, that, all of that stuff is...
Sucks.
There's so many points where people can drop off.
Yeah.
It sucks. Yeah. So I think, you know, I think there's a way that we can do it though. And I don't know if you guys saw, there's a Nosta app called Primal. And what they've done is you actually top up your wallet with an in-app purchase. So you give Apple the 30%. Which means that the sats that you're topping up with, you're getting ripped off by Apple, basically.
Yeah.
But they've done that without requiring KYC, and it's a limit of $5. But that's the type of thing that I think could make the first, you know, experience of using a value for value app way better, because you don't have to go through the loops of, you know, figuring out Bitcoin or Lightning or buying or anything like that. It's just an in-app purchase, which most people have done and are comfortable with.
So they get started max $5, and then Apple takes a buck and a half.
Yeah.
God.
Well, that's actually a pretty cool idea, because you get
people started. That's for sure.
Yeah. You get them. You get $5. You know, it's the easy entrance, and then once people learn about it, then you're like, okay, well, there actually is another way. You have a wallet that exists outside.
Yeah, you can take top down, it up over. Yeah, you can take them down a path.
Yeah. Right. To
explain
right.
stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes
how
sense.
How about Strike? Is that because I think you can use Strike now as well? Did I see?
Yeah,
that?
Yeah. So you can top up. We've got an integration with Strike, where if you have a Strike account, you can top up your Fountain wallet with one tap. It's like an OAuth integration with Strike. So that works well. But obviously, if you don't have a Strike account, then you're still stuck in no man's land, you know, trying to figure it all out. So,
yeah.
Are you...
I don't know about... I know this is all annoying. This is very annoying, and I know it does suck, but you know, I keep coming back to this idea of, like, it sucks in real life with fiat too, in a lot of ways. I mean, just trying to get somebody money. I mean, we have to have the same app, and then, okay, I'm going to pay you back for this thing. Do you have Venmo? No. Do you have Cash App? No. Yeah, but I don't have that, so I know I'm going to have to go Cash App. Now I'm going to have to KYC my bank. I mean, like, we already jumped through a lot of hoops in fiat, too. I think we're more used to it, and so we kind of give it the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. And remember, all of this stuff has had its own paths. You know, it's like, it's just that this is a payment thing and people are very used to payment systems working. But I find, as a podcaster, when I explain it to people and say, hey, guess what? You know, freedom requires an extra step. That always works, by the way. Oh, okay. So there's no one in the middle. It's just you and me, baby. You know, that typically works quite well. Are you planning on, enabling video playback?
We definitely want to support video for live streams. That's the kind of first step, in which we don't support right now on mobile. And further than that, I guess for me, you know, I've always just tried to build the features that I want to see into Fountain. And for me, I've never really understood the appeal of watching the video version of a podcast. I totally get it for live streams, but I think for me, the magic of podcasting and audio is that you can be, you know, doing the washing up, stuck on a bus in London traffic, or, you know, just walking to the shops, and you can be, you know, listening to incredible content. So I think for that reason, video, it's a different thing when you need to have the app open to actually use it. But we definitely support it if that's what people wanted. And I think definitely for live, we're going to add that soon to the mobile app.
Cool.
Is correct me if I'm wrong, is the Rogan video Spotify only, and only the audio is in the feed?
As far as I know.
Okay.
But he may be doing a deal with YouTube. I got to tell you, all these Spotify deals, you know, everyone's on the market. I think they really went, like, you know, we'll give you a guaranteed minimum of almost nothing. I'm not sure about Rogan. It's which he now, also did we see his feed move to Megaphone? So I guess they're getting serious now about ads, of which there have been none. So yeah, I'm not so sure what's going on with all of that. I mean, I think there's a lot of big talk about big numbers, but I'm not sure the numbers are really all that big.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's, I'm just wondering if at some point, because a show like Rogan's, it kind of defies explanation. That may be the only podcast that people really crave the video first experience for.
If they really do, I'm still not even sure about that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, there's just no way to know.
No.
I hate to do this, but do we need to talk? Don't we need to talk about fees? I mean, like, I hate to just throw cold water on everything.
We need a jingle like horrible, awful fee talk.
I think you need to pop the math jingle, and I think we just need to take this pill.
All right, here we go.
It's so hot when you talk math. Run that Sphinx dry.
Woo,
talk
baby.
Math to me.
Oh yeah, we're talking that math. And we're talking math.
I love this, the fact that that jingle still references Sphinx. That's the best part of it. Yeah.
That's funny.
So the proposal in the namespace that to remove or to change the way that the fees work in the value recipient. So for current, the way it is now, the fee, if you have an attribute on a value recipient tag, a fee equals true, that means that the split value is now no longer a share. It's now a straight percentage. So fee equals true. And then the value recipient, the value split is one. That means 1% off the total. There's problems here. The biggest problem I see right off the bat, and it was not really something anticipated in the beginning when we first worked this stuff out. The biggest problem to me is you cannot go less than a 1% split.
Right.
Well, that's fine if you have, we're talking about $100 a month. If we're talking about $20,000 a month, well, then, if you're sending a transcription service, you may not want to send a transcription service to, $200 a month for, a couple of transcripts. So the fact that you can't go below a 1% is, to me, the biggest problem. Do you agree with this initial premise, Oscar?
Yeah, definitely. I think that for me, the reason that I was, hesitant about that wording change is because I think that there's two things going on, really. I think the first is we actually never adhered to the spec as it's written out on Podcast Index in terms of, I think it's treating the fee splits as percentages first.
Yes.
And then tallying up the rest of the splits as quote unquote shares, and then splitting those equally based on that total. And that was something that, maybe it was an oversight, or maybe, in fact, it definitely was an oversight, but we just never took that into account. And I'm not sure that other apps did either. I think it was just something that was never really looked at with much detail. And it was only when Dovidas kind of tried to clarify that I thought to myself, I'm not sure, how intuitive it is. Because I think another thing that we've found over the past couple of years is just the confusion around splits. There's a lot of confusion. And I just, from my perspective, I think, we should prioritize simplicity for both the listener and the podcaster over, these fee service splits that maybe want to, have some minimum or, have a fixed percentage split. And so that's why my perspective on it would be we should just treat all splits as equal and kind of like forget about the fee aspect to it. Yeah, that's kind of my high level view on it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I think the proposal is basically remove the idea of a percentage and just treat fee splits just as if they're shares. They're just shares, just like everything else. So a split. Everybody gets the same split. It's not this. Not this one value recipient.
No treated. No prioritization.
Yeah, it's not treated differently.
Yeah,
it's not
exactly.
It's not like you. Somebody jumps ahead of the line, or somebody gets. You have to do special math for this split, and then do another round of math for the other one. I mean, Dovidas. I mean, God, I love you, Dovidas. I mean, the math problems that he did in LaTeX in order to lay all this out just made me angry. I mean, like, it made me laugh angry.
Is there anyone pushing back on this? I haven't looked at the GitHub proposal, but is everyone kind of cool with this?
Because
it was really only app developers, I think, who were getting the preferred splits. Now I know they're okay. So where this comes into play, are you okay there, Oscar? It sounds like you're falling off the chair.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm all good.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I think is ipfspodcasting.net, which I want to talk about anyway. Because, you know, what happened with IPFS podcasting, which actually is not really IPFS podcasting. It's, you know, it's not like everyone's sharing bandwidth. You know, you have a whole bunch of copies of your episodes and it's all going through one or two gateways. And people started thinking that this was a business model instead of value for value. And, you know, and IPFS podcasting requires a 5% fee in the old calculation model. And, you know, it's still all manual. It's not really set up the way I think it should or could work. I'm not sure if we can ever make it work perfectly. By the way, I'm publishing today's episode through the IPFS gateway so that Jason at Podcast Guru can work on testing his native IPFS client in Podcast Guru, which is awesome. That's what I think it should be, because right now we're dealing with gateways. But I think Cameron may have some feedback, because, you know, he was very adamant about, hey, people need to get paid. And I'm like, you know, that's never really going to work. If people want to compensate their bandwidth and storage with splits, and you want to have fees on top, I don't think it's proven. People aren't really using it. It's unreliable. It just hasn't worked well enough yet.
Yeah. And I think that if, you know, I would feel a little bit differently if we didn't now have remote items and remote value time splits, because I think then it would be easier for everybody involved to understand that, okay, this is a service fee, and therefore, you know, we can't reduce the percentage, and then the rest can be treated as shares. But when you start to add in the value time splits, as you said, Dave, that, you know, you start doing equations, and I think that the simplest thing for everybody would just be to, you know, just treat them equally. And I think that any fee service provider, and, you know, Fountain does this as well. We provide the boost bot for a 1% fee split. I think we're still so early with this, and I think the more we can prioritize simplicity for the listener and the podcaster over what is probably just going to be a small amount of incremental fee revenue, I think it will be kind of better for everybody. But also, I will say, I'm not like, I'm happy to go with whatever the community want to go with.
Here's a question about the BoostBot. Does the BoostBot take remote items into account? And let me see if I can give you the use case. Maybe I'm thinking strangely. So if someone boosts Abby Muir on Boost the Grand Ball, the remote item gets a split. Would that also show up under the activity tab on Abby Muir's song in Fountain?
No, it doesn't do that yet, but that's something that we could definitely add. And I think that. Sorry, go ahead.
No, please go. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that the way that we are using the boost bot to, you know, surface the boost from other apps, we kind of did that as a, you know, quick fix, but I don't think it's the right long-term solution, because what would inevitably happen is that every app or service that wants to display the boost would have to add a 1% split, and then all of these, you know, app-specific boost bot splits would add up.
So here's,
and I think that we need a better way.
Here is, so I was listening to Sam Sethi on Pod News Weekly Review. I think I heard him say something different, or because he has activity streams, he's pushing very hard for this. And I think I heard him, maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, Dave, if you heard this part of the conversation. I think I heard him say, wouldn't it be interesting to put the activity stream values into the TLV record? Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think I'm that far in the show, so I'm, I don't think I can help you with that.
Because ultimately, I mean, I can hear him screaming right now. What he's saying is we should all be using activity streams, which means somehow there's an XML stream that comes out of every user's behavior that they can manage, but it still needs to be published somewhere for other apps to get. I don't know. And I thought he said, what if we put that information in those values into the streaming sats, and then maybe the hosts get that? I don't know, the hosting companies. There's something there. I can't quite figure it out yet, but I agree with you. Obviously, Oscar, is we need a way. And I always thought it would be a service that you could, you know, do a 1% split to a service, and that service would then publish that information for other apps to grab, is what I thought might happen. And then everyone died.
Yeah. I was thinking through. I mean, my view on this is, the dreaded Nosta word, which I know people have different views on, but I saw that latest proposal on the Nosta repository that, you know, wanted to replace RSS entirely, which I think I talked them off the ledge.
You did. You did. You brought out the book. You brought out the book, the New Testament. It's like, you're going against God, son. Yeah, that was good.
Paraphrase. That's LLM paraphrase. Yes.
But yeah, I do think, you know, and whether it's Nosta or something else, personally, I think Nosta would work quite well, is that just not for anything to do with the media hosting, but just for the comments, because then, you know, all we need to do is just agree on the way that we reference, and we've got the podcast GUIDs, we can just stick them in as tags, and then it's not a service that we're using, it's just, you know, the comments live on Nosta and every app can pull them in.
I think you actually suggested that, Dave. I mean, or, you know, but maybe not doing it specifically that way, but for the chat or the social interact.
Yeah. My thing was just put in, if the Nosta people want to do, if don't try to replace RSS, just use the existing RSS tagging that we have, and integrate that way, because that's what it's for.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason to get rid of get rid of a thing and try to replace
it. And I think it would provide quite a boost to Noster if you were to implement something like that, Oscar, because they're clearly, I always say Noster seems to be a solution looking for a problem. You know, when people are like, yeah, we'll replace RSS. I'm like, okay, you got nothing better to do? You know, it's like, no. Add to it.
I think that, you know, I understand that there's been some kind of like, you know, I guess maybe this is a strong word, but animosity between, you know, people who, and I just don't see it that way as some kind of RSS versus Noster thing. I think that's a crazy way to think about it. I think that, you know, both in Noster and in podcasting 2.0, we have, you know, the big, big issue of onboarding people to Lightning. And that is, I think, the real, you know, blocker in onboarding more podcasters to value for value. Like, that's what we see week in, week out when we speak to podcasters. And I think the Noster community of developers and users, and, you know, it is an active community, they have that exact same problem. And every single person that they onboard to a Lightning wallet is someone that we won't have to, and vice versa. And we can also learn from each other in terms of how we do that. You know, I gave the example of Primal's onboarding earlier. And so I think that, you know, we shouldn't be framing it through this RSS versus Noster kind of paradigm. Instead, it should, I think Noster is a great option for, you know, cross-app comments in podcasting, a great option for live chat. And because of the way the spec is framed, it doesn't have to be the only one, and the podcaster can decide. But I think that's something that we should try and explore.
Here's my view, because now we'll just leave aside the discussions of RSS and replacing podcasting. I don't think that's ever been the issue. The issue is Keysend versus LNURL or LNURL Pay, whatever, Zap versus Boost. Mm. This is the issue. That's the only issue in my mind. And I'm not quite sure how we solve it, because you're right. We're onboarding people into two different, basically we're onboarding people in both sides. Noster and 2.0 are onboarding people into Bitcoin, but very different functioning wallets. Albi actually has, you know, is doing a little bit of both. But the mechanisms are just seem kind of incompatible. If we could make those work together somehow, then we have magic, because there's no animosity. We're all nerds. We're all developers. We all want to, we all want to make this stuff work, you know, and I'll just brush aside the, you know, the people who are like, we take a vote. Okay, fine, whatever. But also, you know, what are you really good at? You're good at messaging. And payments were just, it's, you know, Twitter can do just as good, Zaps just as well. It's not anything special. It's just you're putting it into the app. So if we can marry those two somehow, that, you know, even the fact that we talk about Zaps versus Boosts, if we can marry those two into 2.0, I think we have something really beautiful. And they can just be another thing Noster does. That's where I think we need to be. Yeah. And not like and or, but make Noster do cross-app comments, make Noster, you know, your profile for login for chat. We already have demonstrated that. It already works, you know, and then somehow we need to integrate the Zap and the Boost function into doing what we need it to do. Yes, Sam Sethi, I know that you already have that. I find the language is the biggest barrier, Zap versus Boost. And under the hood, we know what a Boost does. We know how it works with splits. We figured this out. Can we get them to utilize what we've already figured out and have implemented for 3 years?
Yeah, this 100%. Is my, this was my,
and I wish.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just going to say that was my point to them. I was trying to make that point, whether I did or not. I don't know. It's just, there's so much wasted effort trying to, you know, move this boulder up a hill. Don't do that. Do something new, do something different. Figure out, look at the tags that are written it would be so much easier rather than trying to reinvent podcasting to pull the RSS in these apps. And then if you want to go do stuff over Nostr and allow them to zap through to the value recipients and stuff that are already there, then basically you've turned Nostr into just a big podcast app. And that's fine. I mean, that works fine. Do that if you want to. Just don't. I just dread this wasted effort of trying to reinvent everything, especially in an industry that is not going to budge.
Right.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that the language point, Adam, is really, really important, because you're right that they are conceptually different. And I actually think that it doesn't have to be Boost versus Zap. They can be conceptually different things. So I'll give you an example. We actually have in Fountain right now, when someone sends a boost or leaves a comment on an episode that is from a show that's not value enabled, or somebody creates a clip or somebody replies to a boost or a comment, we have paid likes where you send sats in the form of a like. And to me, that is the equivalent of a zap on Nostr, which is, you know, more light touch. There isn't, you know, it's less thought through. Whereas a boost within podcasting 2.0 is something that you do, you know, because you really enjoyed that content and you're sending, you know, a message along with it. And so I think that we can kind of maintain that difference. And I actually think the boosts are much more powerful because they are more considered by the listener. And then the zaps can still be there in the cross-app comments or chat spec, but the zaps apply at the comment level rather than at the episode or show level like the boost do.
Yeah. So where does that zap go?
So that would go to the person that left the comment. So for example, if I send a 100,000 sat boost to, you know, this show, and then somebody else, and they could be a Fountain listener, they could be a Podverse listener or on any of the apps, because those comments would be visible everywhere. They could zap my boost, and then, you know, I receive maybe like 10 sats or 20 sats.
Yeah. Yeah, that would definitely work. I'm just looking for deeper integration. I don't know. I think maybe Bolt 12, Jesus help us. Bolt 12, Bolt 12 would solve a lot of this. I think it's really just a wallet problem. It's just a wallet problem.
It is. I think we can go, we can firmly say that Lightning, that LND specifically, but Lightning in general, LND specifically, is still a very real limiting factor.
Yeah.
It has problems that are difficult to overcome, and their lack of support for some of these basic things like Bolt 12, it is a problem. I mean, our node is still a very complex thing to run. You know, they're transitioning to SQLite. They still have, all this channel. They still have forced channel closures that they're trying to deal with. I mean, I just want to be realistic here. I mean, let's not paint too rosy of a picture and say that LND is a problem. I wish it was better.
Hey, I'm gonna stop the math talk here. I think we should play a song just so we can take a breath.
Yeah.
Shall we do that? No one gave me any suggestions, so I just pulled something that fits right into the Bitcoin ethos. This is Joe Martin, Man Like Quex, and Richard, and Joe Martin, who, you know, sounds like he's from Nashville normally, all of a sudden he has his Birmingham accent is back. And they did a killer track, which is climbing up the charts everywhere, kids. This is called Rising Free.
Wake up to gray skies, try to see the bright side, finding harder up this hill. I try to wake up, try to unplug, but I gotta choose a pill. I can't stop, I won't stop. Meditate till I hear a pin drop. Build something to last forever. A wise man once told me, it's impossible for anyone to own me. With my amber. rubber stone sheets. And now I'm rising free.
P to P, V for V. I start making sense, I'm Isatoshis. Slave to the system and then I break free. When my fear of money becomes BTC. My money's orange now, used to be green. And Twitter is my ex now, got a new team. Purple is my new who, Plebchain is my new crew. Get my intel from my boy QW. It's my freedom chant, no I don't trust banks. Anytime I walk in, feels like quicksand. Yeah, I got a better plan, uncuff my hands. Got 24 words and my piece of land. And my peace of mind, and my piece of freedom. Piece of time and the peace of Eden. No, I'm not dreaming, wide awake. I got a piece of freedom that they can't take.
Now I'm rising free. Life is coming at me. If I blink, it's gonna pass me. Make the most of every day. The future moves faster than the past, so hear me when I say, yeah, yeah. I can't stop, I won't stop. Meditate till I hear a pin drop. Build something that lasts forever. A wise man once told me it's impossible for anyone to own me. Whatever has to do.
Rise and shine, plebs, this is our time. Rise free from the bonds and the shackles that they made for us. Rise free from the path that they forged and paved for us. Rise free from the deep depths and the pit that they set for us. Rise free every day until we are breathless. I'm rising free with these 24 little words. I'm rising free from slavery. No longer I serve the system created to keep a man down. I'm rising free to the day they carry me on my shield and bury me in the ground. I'm rising free. I'm rising free from the lies they told us. I'm rising free from the lies they showed us. I'm rising free from what once controlled us. I'm rising free, no one can hold us. I'm a free man. Are you?
Revolutionary.
There's a good discussion in the boardroom.
Yes.
Yeah, in the boardroom about it's like, well, not Noster or Activity Pub for cross-app comments.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you don't have to choose one.
Yeah, you can use whatever you want. You can choose either one.
Yeah, so social interact tag, you can have more than one. And it has a priority field in it, in a priority attribute where you could even say, okay, I'm going to put three of them in here. One's going to be Activity Pub, one will be Noster, one will be something else. And you can say, I prioritize Activity Pub, but I'm also going to put a Noster thing in. That doesn't mean it's going to work because apps still have to support it.
Mm-hmm.
And the most support is around Activity Pub, but it doesn't mean like all these tags that we're putting into the namespace. First and foremost, priority number one is to make them open.
Yeah.
Where they're flexible enough to support any protocol right now or in the future. So you can define it in there and you can put it in there and then maybe apps will evolve to support it. But the namespace is not constraining you to a specific protocol. You can do whatever you want. And I think that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shall we thank a few people?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Let me see. We got a couple of boosts that came in live. I think we have most of them. So let me see what we have here. We have Sir Sean Reiser with 1,000 sats. He says, I am boosting as I, quote, migrate a server. Podcasting. We know what you're up to. We know what you're
up to. Wink, wink, understood. Check your logs.
33,000. Check your logs. Sued. Sorry. Eric PP, 3333, no message. Dreb Scott, 23,456. He just says, booze. Thank you very much. The Tone Wrecker with 10,000 sats. And he says, testing the live feed in Fountain today on the lunch break. Dobidas, you just heard him come in, rssblue.com, boosting London from London. There you go. Oh. Yes, of course, that is true. We do have Oscars in our split for
that's a cross town boost.
That is right. From North London to South London. Who knows? Let me see. Dreb Scott with 1111 D's. Let me see. I think that's that is all that I have for the live boost. Yeah, I think that's it.
Oh, we got a couple of one-off PayPals this week, which is fun. We got let's see, where is that? Yeah, there it is. We got Jesse Hunter. No note, but Jesse sent us $10. Thank you, Jesse.
Thank appreciate you, Jesse. It. Nice.
Appreciate that. And Kyle Bondo at Gagglepod sent us $50.
Gagglepod.
Thank you, Kyle.
Nice.
Gagglepod. And he says, messages, greetings. With every 10 developer questions I ask Dave, I will send in my swear jar earnings. My hosting platform, once told, is almost Podcasting 2.0 ready, and it is thanks to you both. Keep riding the boost lightning. Cheers, Kyle Bondo from Gagglepod.
Where is riding the boost lightning? Where did that one go?
Yeah.
Oh. Hold on. There it is, riding the boost lightning. There it is.
Oh, we got some, I got some boosts. We got Gene Everett, Gene Bean, 3333 through Fountain. He says, man, this guest is lost on his YouTube take. So many holes can be poked into their...
Wait, this is from last week. This is Benjamin.
Oh, Benjamin. Oh, he's talking about Benjamin.
Yes.
So many holes can be poked into there. You should have known this would be my least favorite guest on here ever when they couldn't answer a simple question early on and instead got rude and said, what is this, a political podcast?
Hey, no, he's French.
He's French, yeah.
That's just how they talk. Yeah. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't boost at all.
The French always sound like they're pissed off. Yeah. It's just what they do.
It's just, yeah. It's just French. No, there was no offense anywhere, none taken. And I thought it was an interesting point that he made about not... You know, okay, we're not all fans of advertising, but he said, you know, why let one company take all the advertising when we could have an open system? I didn't think that was a bad thing to say at all.
And Benjamin is a sweet, sweet human being. This don't, yeah.
For a Frenchman.
I think you may have misunderstood.
I think so too.
Satchel Richards in the morning. He says, Fountain, 1111 boost. Okay. Well, thank you in the morning.
Appreciate that.
Nicholas B58, 10,000 sats. Fountain, he says, boosting from my road trip to a local Bitcoin meetup. Oh, nice. The wild. Yeah, he's going to the Bitcoin Bible study.
Oh.
Mere Mortals, 1111. Our buddy Kyron, Satchel Richards over there. He says, through Fountain, he says, we eat kangaroos here, but they put up a fair fight. You need to become a decent boxer first.
I've had kangaroo. It's tough.
Is it any good?
No, it's tough. Okay. It's really tough. I had the kangaroo and I had the emu egg. Was that you want? You don't want to ask for a scrambled emu egg in Australia. You'll never be able to finish it. That thing is huge.
They're like a football size.
Yeah,
a football.
Pretty much. Yeah, like a Nerf football. Exactly.
Oh, look who's here. It's Dame Jennifer. 333.
Oh, hello, Dame Jennifer. Hello.
She says, boosting to try and keep myself accountable for doing an audiobook this month.
Ah.
This idea has been marinating for a while and has been too low on my to-do list. Shout out to the RSS Blue for making it so easy. Also, still making progress on the V4V Explainer. Hopefully next week. Kisses and hugs, Dame Jennifer.
Kisses and hugs back. Thank you.
Chris Lass. Oh, it's our buddy Chris over at Jupiter Broadcasting through Podcast Index. He says, Adam. Oh, 21,000 stats. He says, Adam.
Yeah.
I caught you listening to the breakdown. I'd love to have you check out my new show, This Week in Bitcoin. Yep.
Oh.
Twib. Yes.
All right. I'm
going to. He says, I'm going for it, brother. I want to make the go-to Bitcoin news podcast for the Podcasting 2.0 community focused on the Bitcoin signal, not ship coins. and I will pack as many 2.0 features as I can into this new show. The website is still a work in progress, but the show is listed on the index and hosted on Podhome. Go podcasting.
And I am...
Go podcasting!
Subscribed. Episode number one. Why Bezos is buying your bag. Okay, I'm done. I'm subscribed, brother. I'm subscribed, and I am hitting you up right away. I'm locking it in with the streaming sats. Beautiful. Cool deal.
Nice.
Cool deal.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, Chris. Comic strip blogger, 25,000 sats, the delimiter. He's through Fountain. He says, hello, Adam and Dave. Are you ready to embark on a wild and wacky journey through the minds of two Texans? Well, buckle up, Buttercup. Join us as we dive into the hilarious and informative podcast hosted by none other than Gene, the enterprise consultant, and Ben, the InfoSec expert who's got more security tips than a secret agent's secret diary. You can find that interesting podcast at www.justtwogoodoldboys.com. Yo, CSB.
Yo, CSB. Thank you very much. Believe it or not, Dave, we have a Tallycoin donation.
Yikes.
Yeah, I know. Right. From Eric PP. He sent it last week. He says, fees are so low, so time for an on-chain donation. 33,369 sats. Thank you, brother. That's beautiful.
Oh.
Appreciate it. Good to see that happening.
That should also... look at me putting stuff on Eric PP's plate. On-chain sins could be in helipad. Just saying. Could be a helipad feature. Did you read this Kyron Mirror Mortals boost?
I did
about
not.
CSB?
No, I did not. I did not.
Satchel Richards through Fountain, he says, just saw CSB's boost, and it reminded me that I hadn't sent through my other one. Can I do this? Is it legal to send after his? Will the board find me? Post-delimiter.
The board is okay.
It just comes through as an error. Yeah,
the board is okay.
It's like a divide by zero. Anywho, Value for Value Season 4 is starting live again on Sunday midnight at UTC plus zero.
Nice.
You get that one time. That's the only time. Next week, you have to send in sooner. Monthlies. We've got two make goods because I had 600 unread emails in my inbox of Podcast Index. And amongst the unread emails were two from February the 1st, the donations that I missed from Chad Farrow, $20.22, and Cameron Rose, $25. And I'm sorry, guys. Sorry, make good. Michael Kimmerer this week, $5.33. Thank you, Michael Kimmerer. Dreb Scott, $15. Pedro Goncalves, $5. Chad Farrow, again, $20.22. That's for this month's donation. And Cameron Rose, $25. Thank you, guys.
Thank you all so much. Yeah. Wonderful. A reminder, Value for Value for the entire project, not just for the podcast, but really for everything we're running, for all those warm migrations in the morning. Go to podcastindex.org. Down at the bottom, you see two red donate buttons. One is for your fiat fund coupons through PayPal. And then, of course, we have the on-chain donation through Tallycoin. But we really want everyone to go to podcasting2.org. Which has a very nice page of all of the apps. I think it could do with a little more marketing for listeners as to what they're actually getting into. But it's all the apps sorted by feature, and you click on it, shows what features they have. Fill up your wallet and send us a boost. We really appreciate that.
I know you can't put the message in the on-chain transaction, but I guess what you could send an on-chain transaction through Helipad.
Yes.
And then send a boost with a reference to the on-chain transaction, a boost for like maybe one sat with a reference to the transaction number.
There you go.
See, that's not complicated.
How about the UXTO? I mean, let's really get into it. Let's do it. Be a little pro about it. Dave, I think you got to go, man. You're probably late for getting back to, because we started late. Apologies for that. Oscar, brother, thank you so much for all that you're doing for 2.0. We're so, so proud to see all of your work and how you're growing, and just wish you nothing but continued success.
Well, thank you guys. You know, we couldn't have done anything with Fountain without what you guys have created with the index. So, you know, we're just hoping that we can push this thing forward over the next couple of years. So, yeah, thanks so much for having me on again. And hopefully we do it again soon.
Yep. It's a marathon, brother. We're all in there.
That's right. And it's the journey, not the destination. Remember that. It's the journey, everybody.
That's right, sweetheart.
All right. Y'all have a great weekend. Thank you, Brother Dave. Thank you, Brother Oscar. Thank you, everybody in the boardroom. We'll be back next week, next Friday. We'll do it all over again. Please join us then for Podcasting 2.0, the board meeting edition.
Podcasts are cool.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
Yikes.
Yeah, I know. Right?